It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 30th. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Happy Memorial Weekend. Can you believe this weather? What is going on with Mother Nature? It was 80-some degrees on Thursday, then it dropped to the 60s on Friday. Beautiful day on Friday. Then we get hit with this Northeaster. I mean, just craziness. Well, pour yourself another cup of coffee, stay warm and dry, and let's talk a little golf, shall we? And we have quite the show lined up for you today. Yes, we'll get to talking about Phil Mickelson and his incredible PGA Championship win in a moment, but I want to tell you about the guests I have lined up for you this morning. It is Memorial Weekend, after all. And to pay tribute to our fallen heroes who sacrificed everything for our freedoms, I thought it would be a perfect time to connect with Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney. Now, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney has many distinctions, one being he is the only person who is both a Class A member of the PGA of America in addition to being a fighter pilot. Rooney was honored with the Spirit of Attack Award as a top graduate of F-16 training. He's a two-time recipient of the Top Gun Award. Yeah, he's an F-16 fighter pilot, and he completed 3 combat tours of duty in Iraq. And some of his honors include, he has so many honors, but some of them include the Air Force Commendation Medal, the Air Medal, the Anti-Terrorism Medal, the Combat Readiness Medal. It goes on and on and on. And he continues to fly. He flies a T-38 as an aggressor pilot in the 301st Fighter Squadron at an Air Force base in Destin, Florida. So how many fighter pilots do we know who are also Class A members of the PGA of America? He's the only one with that distinction. And, you know, he started this Folds of Honor from his garage years ago. And Folds of Honor provides educational scholarships to the spouses and children of wounded or killed military service members. And in 13 years, they have distributed 29,000 scholarships, totaling over $145 million. And throughout this weekend, Folds of Honor has partnered with the PGA and the USGA to host Patriot Golf Days all over the country and raising money for these scholarships for the families of veterans. So we'll check in with Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney in a few minutes. I taped the interview a couple days ago. To learn more, visit patriotgolfdays.com. And then in the second half of the show, we'll get to know Jack Nicklaus's eldest son, Jack Nicklaus II. Jackie 2, we call him. He teamed up with noted author Don Yeager, and he wrote a book that just came out. It's called Best Seat in the House, 18 Golden Lessons from a Father to a Son. And it's just a beautiful tribute to his legendary dad and to both of his parents, really, as his mother, Barbara Nicklaus, is a powerhouse. I mean, she's just incredible. And Jackie, too, and I talk about what it was like for him to grow up, not only as one of Jack and Barbara's 5 children, but as Jack Nicklaus's namesake. You know, that could not have been easy, especially since Jack II played professional golf for a couple years. And it didn't take him long to realize that a professional golf career was not the best career choice for him, with the comparisons to his dad and all the expectations. And so he eventually became the president of Nicklaus Partners and the vice chair of the Nicklaus Companies. And he has a lot of compelling stories on what it was like growing up as the oldest son of the legendary Jack Nicklaus. So all that is coming up this hour. But let's look at some of the top golf stories this week. And the Ladies Professional Golf Association, they have a new commissioner to replace Michael Wan. Now, as you know, Michael Wan led the LPGA to incredible growth in his 11-year tenure as the commissioner. Well, he left the LPGA to become the CEO of the United States Golf Association. He'll start July 1st with the USGA. The new commissioner of the LPGA is a woman named Molly Marcoux-Simon. She spent the last 6 years as the athletic director at Princeton University. And before that, she spent many years in management at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan. I used to go down there and hit balls. That's a cool place. And before that, she was a coach and administrator at Lawrenceville School in New Jersey. So Marcoux-Simon, she was raised in upstate New York. She played varsity soccer and ice hockey at Princeton. She graduated from there in 1991. And I was reading an article, and it said her senior history major was titled The Social Construction of Sport and Gender, A History of Women's Golf from 1895 to 1955. After being named commissioner of the LPGA, she said in quotes, "I believe passionately that sports have the power to change the world, and in this moment in time, with the positive energy around women's sports, women's leadership, and society's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, I believe the LPGA has an incredible opportunity to use our platform for positive change." Well, it certainly does, and Michael Wan is going to be a tough act to follow for sure. Michael Wan's tenure at the LPGA, the LPGA Tour went from a 24-event schedule to 34 events around the globe. The purses increased from $41.4 million to $76.5 million. Television coverage hours increased from 125 per season to more than 500 hours in 170 countries. I mean, you can go on and on about Michael Wan. It will be difficult to duplicate that kind of success, or, you know, maybe not. The time is right for continued growth for women in all of sports. And if the new commissioner can maintain the sponsorship relationships and add new sponsors, well, that's, you know, part of the game. That's very crucial. All right, the PGA Tour is back in Texas, the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth, Texas at Colonial Country Club. And Jordan Spieth birdied the 18th hole to move to 15 under. He has a one-shot lead over Jason Kokrak. And Spieth hit his drive into the rough on the 18th, but his approach shot landed 8 feet from the cup. He sunk the birdie putt there. He carded a second straight 4-under 66. So for the fourth time this season, Jordan Spieth has held the 54-hole lead in a span of 11 tournaments. He won the Valero Texas Open in early April. As you remember, it was his first win since the Open Championship back in 2017. And he actually won at Colonial in 2016 and has been a runner-up there twice. So obviously he knows the course very well. And Sergio Garcia, he won that event 20 years ago. It was his very first PGA Tour event. He's in third place at 10 under. He's 5 shots back. And Ian Poulter with the best round of the day yesterday, a 64. All right, well, it was admirable that Phil Mickelson made good on his commitment to play the Charles Schwab Challenge. He could have pulled out, you know, after winning the PGA Championship, but he made good on his commitment. He did not make the cut. He shot an opening round 73, and on Friday, he shot a 1-under 69, missing the cut by one at +2. And after the bad round on Thursday, he said, "Yeah, I didn't play well. I shot 3 over, but I won the PGA." So, oh, you gotta love Phil. Patrick Reed, Scott Scheffler, Lee Westwood were also among those who did not make the cut. Now, Phil Mickelson will prepare for the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines in San Diego coming up in a couple weeks, June 17th through the 20th. You know, he grew up in San Diego. He's played the South Course a lot before the course was renovated a couple years ago. And as you know, the USGA gave him a special exemption to play in the U.S. Open, which he accepted before he won the PGA Championship. Phil is a 6-time runner-up at the U.S. Open. He needs a U.S. Open title to complete a career Grand Slam. So he said earlier this week he's going to take the next 2 weeks off. He'll spend some time on the South Course to get comfortable with it. He said that since the redo of the course, he's not played that course as well as he would like to. He said in the past he's tried to force it. He He said a lot of pins you can't go to. You have to play 60, 50 feet away. And a lot of holes, he said, he just got overly aggressive, which is his nature. He said there's a proper way to play it, and I've seen it, and I want to have the discipline to do it. And so I want to spend some time out there to develop a good game plan. So that's what he's going to do, spend some time out there to figure it out. And, you know, after he won the PGA Championship, Phil admitted that this upcoming U.S. Open may be his last really good opportunity to win a U.S. Open and that he's going to put everything he has into it. He said his PGA Championship win may quite possibly be the last tournament he ever wins if he's being realistic. Well, you know, that's being realistic. But he also said it's also very possible that he may have had a little bit of a breakthrough with some of his focus and maybe he'll go on a little bit of a run. But wouldn't it be great if Phil could continue the play, the patience and that focus that he had for four straight days on the ocean course on Kiawah Island? And you have to think he will be a strong consideration to make the Ryder Cup team September 24th through the 26th at Whistling Straits in Cooler, Wisconsin. And Steve Stricker is the captain of the U.S. team. And you would think Phil would be an excellent choice if he continues to play consistently well. The captain has six captain's picks in this Ryder Cup, along with the top six who automatically qualify based on, you know, points and rankings. And I would think with Phil's Ryder Cup play experience, and if he can keep up his strong play, he's such a crowd favorite, you would think he would be one of Steve Stricker's captain's picks. He will probably be one of the assistant captains for sure if he doesn't play, or maybe he'll be a playing assistant captain. But you have to think that Phil will be playing, you know, obviously depending. If he plays poorly the next couple months, there's no way he should play in the team. And he wouldn't want that either. You know, he's been a part of 24 straight U.S. team events before being left off that 2019 Presidents Cup team. And earlier this week, he did say that if he were the captain, he would not want a guy who plays well one week in an entire year. He said the fact that he won the PGA Championship playing really well that one week doesn't warrant a spot on the team, but knowing he has at least an opportunity over the course of the next 3 months to play at a high level consistently and maybe be in a position to add something to the team is certainly positive. He went on to say, in quotes, "We have a lot of talented players and I've had 25 years now of playing, so it may be time to step aside and let these young guys take over. And certainly they are playing well enough to do it and to represent the United States incredibly well." Phil said, "For me personally, if I could add to the team and not be a hindrance or a distraction, I would obviously love to be a part of it because they are such special events, and I would love to be able to play for Captain Steve Stricker." So let's see what happens. It would be great if Phil could continue playing really well these next couple months and make that team. Tiger Woods gave his first interview since his car accident this past February. He spoke with Golf Digest. He has a contract with Golf Digest for these kinds of interviews. And he said he is focused on walking on his own. That's his immediate goal. He told Golf Digest that this recovery has been an entirely different animal. He said he understands more of the rehab process because of his past injuries, but this was more painful than anything he has ever experienced. He was asked if he had any hopes of playing golf again. Tiger did not answer that question. He did say that his physical therapy is keeping him busy. He does his routines every day. He's focused on his number one goal right now, and that is walking on his own. He is taking one step at a time. I mean, you saw the crash photos. Tiger is fortunate to have survived that crash. So before we start speculating on whether he will play golf again, we have to let him focus on, you know, rehab and walking without crutches. And it's going to be a very long, painful recovery for sure. All right, we are going to take a quick break. And coming up, the only fighter pilot who is also a PGA Club professional. He's helping the families of fallen veterans, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney, up in a few minutes. But first, let me tell you, at Travelers, never.
It's Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on the Fan.
And community.
Welcome back.
That's
to
why
Talking
we're
Golf
so excited
Ann
to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship.
And it is my pleasure to say hello to Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney, who is the founder and CEO of Folds of
Honor. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million to charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better
the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms, and I know we're going to talk about it, but we all have an opportunity to honor them by playing golf, so it's going to be a blessed weekend.
And I know for the first time in its 15-year history, Patriot Golf Days are being held this weekend as a way to further honor our nation's heroes.
It is, and you know, we'd always the short story long, as they say, is the PGA Championship was always in August. And so with our partnership with the PGA of America, we would host Patriot Golf Days on Labor Day weekend. But since that date obviously moved, and we saw Phil Mickelson just do heroic things on the golf course. But now that the PGA Championship is in May, we've got Patriot Golf Days on its rightful holiday, right, which is Memorial Day. And we all have an opportunity to go tee it up and make a donation on our smartphones. Over that weekend to support the spouses and children who've had somebody killed or disabled, defending our freedoms, and also the great works of bringing veterans to the game of golf to help deal with, you know, this ongoing battle with post-traumatic stress and the 20 veterans a day that are committing suicide using golf as a therapy to help them find a path forward.
Definitely. I know golf is such a great outlet for veterans. I've worked a lot with veterans and hosted panels with veterans who tell me that learning the game and playing the game has been incredible therapy. And a few have even admitted it you know, golf has really saved their lives.
Yeah. It's the silent killer that we're dealing with post-traumatic stress. You know, I've done 3 combat tours in Iraq, and you know, nobody's ever the same once you go to combat. And obviously there's different levels of severity of the impact that it has on you. But to be able to get outside, right, and to exercise and to focus on something else other than, you know, what's often the chaos going inside your own brain, it has proved to be a real game changer for these veterans.
So just so everybody knows, Patriot Golf Days fund educational opportunities for veterans, their spouses, and children. And can you give us an update on how did Folds of Honor and Patriot Golf Days, how did it get started?
Yeah, so, 13 years ago, I felt a calling from God after witnessing Corporal Brock Buckland come home as human remains, and as I was with his identical twin brother, Corporal Brad Buckland, who brought him home, and he had a 4-year-old son. And, you know, as the father of 5, and quite frankly, I speak for, I think, majority of people in the military, our greatest concern is if something happens to us, who will be there to take care of their families? And at its core, that's what Folds of Honor is about. It is about taking care of these families who've had somebody killed or disabled, defending our freedoms. And, you know, golf is, as we know, is a very myopic sport. But this is the one time a year we can tee it up for something bigger than ourselves. And it's just a blessing. And, you know, you mentioned we've been at this 15 years. We've raised, just through Patriot Golf Days, over $50 million in life-changing support. And I think the beauty of these days are you can give a relatively small amount, whether it's a $5 or a $10 donation. And, again, you visit patriotgolfdays.com. or foldsofhonor.org, either place to make a donation, but you're part of something that is truly life-changing as we anticipate, you know, raising over $5 million on this weekend, but we need everybody to get out and tee it up.
Your efforts are incredible, and I know you have the rare distinction of being both a Class A member of the PGA in addition to being a fighter pilot. I don't know how many others really have done what you've done, the combination of golf and being a fighter pilot. I know you've had, 3 tours of duty in Iraq. Just an incredible background that you have, Dan.
Yeah, so I'm the only one. I'm a PGA Club Pro and a fighter pilot, and I'm blessed to have a great community in both of those places, but obviously position me uniquely to start Folds of Honor. And having these two very relevant experiences in the military, but also as a club professional, and to be able to bring these things that I love, the game of golf, together in our military to support these families. No doubt God had a plan when I thought I was just writing the ultimate job description for myself. And, he laughed at that and said, hey, we got bigger things to do. And hence Folds of Honor was born and Patriot Golf Days.
And in addition to organizing all that, you continue to fly, right? You're an aggressor pilot in the 301st Fighter Squadron at Eglin Air Force Base in Destin, Florida. So you're still doing both golf and flying.
I do, yeah. Yeah, still fighting for freedom and still trying to make birdies. So it is great to be able to combine. I think everybody, honestly, and if you look at life, if you can combine what you do with who you are, that's being true to the gifts that God has given you. And, I thank the good Lord every day that I'm able to continue to do both of these.
I know they both have to give you a tremendous adrenaline run, right, when you're in a plane, obviously. And then if you're playing great golf and have a couple birdies around, which one do you get the most thrill out of?
Yeah, it's not even close. It's being up in the skies, faster than the speed of sound. That is, such a unique and hyper-focused experience. And, certainly hitting a great golf shot is exciting. We all get that. We love the game. And, it's fun, but it lasts for, two or three seconds. And, being up there for an hour and a half in a fighter jet over the steel blue ocean off the Gulf of Mexico, doing what you love. And as an old guy, that runway is shrinking for me, being in the jet. But I would definitely say flying fighters is more intense and hair on fire, more exciting than making a birdie.
I can imagine. But I'm sure as far as that intensity goes and that focus, you could relate to what Phil Mickelson might have been experiencing at the PGA Championship when he was saying, he kind of lost focus the last, as he gets older, but somehow he managed to put it all together.
Yeah. I cried when I watched Phil do that. I'll give you a quick Phil story. This was like 5 years ago. I was given a talk at the Texas Valero Open on Friday night, and he missed the cut, and he could have gotten in his jet and blasted off, but he went and showered, put a coat and tie on, and he came and he sat with my two of my daughters at dinner and, watched the talk and then hung out afterwards and did a little Q&A. And that's the kind of guy Phil is. And I just love it when people aren't a prisoner of common assumption. Right. And they just don't listen to the experts, all the pundits in the world. It's so easy to sit back and say what can and can't be done, what'll never be done. And if you listen to what everybody was saying at the beginning of the week about Phil's chances, it was never going to happen. Only people, you're the only one that knows what the fire is in your heart. And it was just so fun for golf and humanity and to watch my buddy Phil do what had never been done before.
Absolutely. A true testament to really taking care of yourself physically, mentally, eating right, exercising. I really feel he's in better shape now than ever.
Oh, yeah. When you look at pictures of old Phil, he certainly appears to be much more fit in this part of his life. And he alluded to that. He was like, hey, you can do things when you're old. You just have to work a little harder and eat a little less. And he's definitely living that anthem.
I know, Dan, you partnered with Jack Nicklaus to design and build American Dunes, a golf course in Michigan that provides hope and healing to military veterans. And it really just opened. So how's that going?
Yeah, so we opened 3 weeks ago, and it memorializes forever the birthplace of Folds. Jack Nicklaus donated his $3 million fee to design an epic track in the sand dunes along Lake Michigan. And I'll share one anecdote with you that I think sums up American Dunes. I'm sitting with Mr. Nicklaus at the press conference on Sunday, and I said, Mr. Nicklaus, have you ever been to a golf course opening like this? And he looked at me and, he paused. And he said, Colonel Dan, I've never been to anything like this in my life. And certainly Jack's seen a lot of things and played all the great golf courses and experienced so much. But if it touches Jack in that way, just imagine how it will touch the, you know, the average golfer's heart and mind to get to be a part of this place.
Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney, I really appreciate your time and all the best this weekend with Patriot Golf Days. And thanks so much for your service and everything you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Ann. And get out and play golf this Memorial Day. PatriotGolfDays.com. It's the most heroic round of the year. God bless you and God bless this great country we live in.
Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney, just an extraordinary person. Well, coming up, Jack Nicklaus II on his new book, Best Seat in the House, 18 Golden Lessons from a Father to a Son. He also shares some classic stories of growing up as the eldest child of the legendary golfer. All that coming up. But first, let me tell you that at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. And my guest is Jack Nicklaus II, the oldest child of Jack and Barbara Nicklaus. Welcome to the show, Jackie. So nice to talk to you.
Well, thanks. Nice speaking with you, Ann. It's good to be on your show.
So I really enjoyed reading your book, co-authored with Don Yeager, called Best Seat in the House, 18 Golden Lessons from a Father to His Son. And what a beautiful and meaningful tribute to your father. Really enjoyed reading the book.
Well, thanks so much. And that was my original push or goal, was to pay tribute to both my mom and my dad, kind of give people a glimpse inside the rope, so to speak, at a great man, a great career, and really a great life. And one of my goals was to get it to mom and dad while, we're blessed to still have them with us. And I got an amazing message yesterday at a book signing, the first one I'd ever done with Don Yeager, as you mentioned, and really a warm, audio video, congratulatory from mom and dad, which meant the world to me.
Well, they must have been just so delighted with the way the book turned out, right?
I think so. Yeah, my mom helped me a lot with grammatical editing. She was great. My dad had not read the book till really it came out in print. So, he wrote the foreword for me, and it was a collaboration. But I think they're very pleased how it came out, and the message that mom and dad basically gave to me is yesterday was, it was they saw it as an honor. They expressed that they were proud of my efforts, and they were thankful that I did pay attention along the way when maybe I didn't always appear that I was. I was listening, although I didn't always appear to be listening.
And you go into some of that in the book too, but you certainly did have the best seat in the house to watch your golfing legend father, whom you said shaped everything for you.
Well, I did. I got to caddy for dad in 1986 Masters, and I've learned over the years the significance of that event. Obviously dad's final major that he won, but so many people approached me and said, I know where I was when your dad won that his sixth green jacket. And anyway, pretty neat. And again, I felt like I had the best seat in the house watching dad go through his emotions that day on the golf course and throughout the week, and manage those emotions, manage his talent, his golf game, towards the end of his career, obviously at the age of 46, but always felt like, that was an amazing experience for me that Dad shared with me, that walk at Augusta, and just always so appreciative of that.
I mean, what an honor to caddy for your dad when he won the green jacket at the age of 46. Did some of those memories kind of come back to you when you saw Phil Mickelson become the oldest to win a major championship at the age of 50?
Well, what Phil did this last week at the PGA Championship is absolutely phenomenal. Phil has worked very hard at keeping himself physically in shape, but really talking with Dad, the biggest challenge that he found later in his career was not so much the physical part, but the mental part of it. Dad felt like he had no problem concentrating for 4 days in a row. The last probably 10, 15 years of his competitive career, he found that maybe he could only concentrate 2 out of the 4 days and be totally dialed in. But so just total hats off for what Phil did to manage his golf game on a really, really tough golf course there at Kiawah. I'm so happy for Phil. Phil's been a great fan of the Nicklaus family for years, and just amazing. Over 50 years of age and winning a major is awesome.
And what did your dad do to work on his focus when he aged? Did he do anything specifically? Because I know it has been a problem for Phil. Phil admitted that a couple weeks ago, that he had problem sustaining focus.
Well, I don't. I just think it's something that happens when you get older. But you're also talking to somebody that has won 0 majors. So, from my perspective as a caddy, I really just observe my dad and his, his peer group. And I tried to play golf a little bit, when I was younger. But that just dad expressed to me he didn't do anything specific. He just knew that he couldn't keep his concentration like he used to be able to. And I often ask my dad when I was trying to compete myself, how do you maintain your concentration? How do you, do what you do? And he kind of looked at me kind of bewildered. He goes, what do you mean? I don't think about it. I just do it. And he's just always had a great ability to, get dialed in and manage his emotions. And he always somehow was able to take a pressure cooker situation. And I think it focused him more, and the champions of any profession, whether it's specifically golf, whether it's Phil recently or Tiger Woods or my father or Sam Snead or whoever, when they need to make a putt, they make a putt, and that's just something the champions have.
And it's just so cool, as you say, to have the best seat in the house and to observe that, not only of your father, but, to see some of these other champions as well, how they handle the sport mentally. You wrote that parenting was the most important part of your dad's life. How did he manage to prioritize being a dad with his hectic golf and travel schedule?
Quick answer, my mom.
Barb is a gem, a true gem.
That's the truth. She was able to really manage the family. She kept the family in order and allowed my dad to focus on what he needed to focus on. But again, my mom and dad, I know they had great parents, my grandparents, and they had a great foundation to start with. And dad made a promise early on in his career to my mom, knowing he'd be on the road a lot with his job, that he would never be away for more than 2 weeks at a time, which is a tough commitment to make. And he was true to that. He'll admit all but 2 times in his career where, he had a long, long trip overseas. But my mom and dad were always there, and it never, maybe a typical parent might be, working locally a 9-to-5 job, and those parents weren't always at our ball games or our significant events growing up. And my mom and dad always seemed to be there. And I think it's a choice that mom and dad made to be with us, because certainly they could have chosen not to be there. As a parent myself, I really have come to appreciate that commitment, because it's not easy to be there all the time. And anyway, my parents were.
Absolutely, especially awesome with your dad's schedule, traveling the world. And I mean, that was a huge mandate to make sure he wasn't away from home for more than 2 weeks. And you're the oldest of 5 children. So there was a lot going on in your household, I'm sure.
Yeah, there always was. And you know, Dad, again, you talk about his ability to concentrate and mixing it with family. He really had three segments of his life that he was able to fully focus on when he was there, whether it be family, business, or golf. And I actually think the other two kept him fresh for whatever his discipline was at the time. So he always was dialed in, whether it was, again, those three disciplines of family, business, and golf. He was always seemed to be dialed in. And he didn't much worry about business when he was golfing. And obviously when he was with family, he wasn't thinking about anything else but family.
Your parents, Jack and Barbara, were only 21 years old when they had you. And you wrote that your dad had just won two U.S. amateur titles, and then he finished second behind Arnold Palmer by two shots. And he turned pro 2 months after your birth. And actually, in addition to playing golf, he sold insurance and did promotional work. A lot of people forget that pros back then, especially in the early days, had to have other jobs to make ends meet, right?
There's no question. Dad was selling life insurance really to support his love of playing golf. It was not something that back then that he really felt like he'd make a living doing. I don't know what he won when he won his first event in 1962 U.S. Open at Oakmont, but I want to say it was maybe $8,000. And when you start talking about the travel and the hotels and the babysitters and meals and caddies and everything else, it's that's why he had a secondary job. And but so proud of Mom and Dad for their commitment over the years. And I'm a lucky boy.
What are some of your earliest memories of those road trips? That must have been a lot of fun being in the car when you were so young with your parents on those long trips. Because you traveled by car mostly back then, right?
Mom and Dad did. And I don't much remember it, but that was, they reflected to me that those were the days of non-disposable diapers. So they saved everything back then. And they had to visit the laundromat a couple times a week to keep everything fresh, but maybe too many details. But those were the early days when I was a little guy in diapers, traveling around the world while Dad played golf. But they always took us on the road with them, certainly in the summer times when we were able to travel out of school. But again, we never saw Dad as the golfing great. He was always Dad to us. And that was people ask me, what does your dad do for work? And my response, again, I was only 4 or 5 years old. My response was, oh, my dad doesn't work. He just plays golf. But that's all we
love
knew.
That.
It was simple for us, and they never made a big deal out of it. Honestly, dad and mom still don't make a big deal out of it. When I was writing this book, and, I started to reflect on his career, and I realized how amazing his career has been. But I walked into his office, and I started looking around at some of the memorabilia and the awards and trophies. I just, the pictures, and I just had to shake my head thinking, wow, this is stuff that, Dad never talks about. He, obviously he's very proud of it, but he does not make a big deal out of it. And I would only know, my grandkids would only know if I actually, stepped back from our own lives and looked around and said, wow, look at these trophies. Grandpa's amazing.
Absolutely legendary, your father and your mother. But how difficult was it for you growing up to not only be Jack Nicklaus's oldest child, but also his namesake?
Well, first and foremost, incredibly blessed. I saw so much of the world and got to, I have the best parents in the world as far as role models and, life examples of how to march my own life. And I'm blessed my children have that same example. They are so involved with my kids, their grandchildren's lives. But I will say there's definitely was some challenges, sharing the Jack Nicklaus name. I actually see it in my son, Jack. He reflected me times when, for instance, when he was about 14 or 15 years old, he went to the Duke basketball camp. Coach K's coaching it, and part of the thing was all the kids had to stand up and introduce themselves. And Jackie said when he stood up, he said, "Hi, my name's Jack," and sat back down. And Coach K asked him to stand back up and said, "Jack, give us your full name." And I didn't realize that, you know, he was, you know, a little self-conscious about it. And he said, "Dad, I just wanted to be treated like everybody else, not to be singled out and think that I was someone different, or think of me first as Jack Nicklaus' grandson before they, you know me as me." And it certainly made me think I had a lot of the same trouble or challenges. I shouldn't say troubles, but challenges growing up about identity. And I know when I played golf, tried myself, I actually reflected in the book, you know, I'd been out on the road for about 10 weeks in a row, and you know, these two guys walked by and they looked at me and said, "Oh, you know, look at him. He'll never win as many golf tournaments as his dad." And I immediately thought to myself, I'm thinking, no, duh. I mean, I'm trying to win my first tournament, and Dad's looking at winning his, you know, 100 tournaments of some sort. So, yes, there was always that identity challenge for me.
Sure, and living under that pressure, I'm sure, was just a day-to-day challenge.
Yeah, it can be.
And I know your brother Gary was called the next Nicklaus on the cover of Sports Illustrated back in 1985. He was 16 at the time, and I know that greatly affected your brother Gary as well.
Well, it did, Ann. Dad agreed, you know, that they could talk to Gary and do a little article, and he thought it was a little article that would end up on the back of Sports Illustrated. And I don't know what was the incentive to motivate it to, you know, cover a story, but you know, a couple months later, Gary found himself on the cover of Sports Illustrated, as you mentioned, deemed the next Nicklaus, and it had a huge effect on Gary. Gary actually shied away from golf. He didn't want to have anything to do with golf for about 2 years, and he ended up, you know, falling back in love with golf, you know, about the time he was entering college. He played at Ohio State and became a very good player. But yeah, it's funny how, you know, exposure and spotlight on a child can have an effect one way or the other. And certainly for Gary, it kind of put him in a bit of a shell.
And you wrote that your father realized, especially with, you know, naming you Jack, that it was going to be quite challenging for you, right?
Well, you know, he explained to me, and of course, children are different, you know, how a child responds to, you know, instruction or criticism. And Dad said early on with me, he was more intent on me enjoying the game of golf when I got into high school and college. And so he was not as tough on me with, you know, mechanics and, you know, swing thoughts and whatnot. It was more about the joy of the game for me. And I got about college time. I loved the game of golf. He took a little bit of different approach with Gary. And Gary took instruction better than me. So you kind of, as a parent, I think you kind of learn as you go. And so Gary, he was more disciplined with Gary's swing fundamentals. And again, I mentioned Gary really didn't like golf for a couple of years and ended up falling back in love with golf. But the end product was Gary today and throughout the last, you know, 30 years has had a lot better fundamentals than I am as it relates to golf. Gary's a better golfer than I am. Now, I can still beat Gary occasionally, but, I think as a parent, you kind of have to let your kids kind of dictate, you know, how much instruction and how much criticism you can give them. You know, parenting, there's no instruction manual as a parent, right? So I think my mom and dad learned on the go, and I'm certainly learning as I go. I'm certainly a father and learning even today.
Yeah, I know you wrote about that in Best Seat in the House, 18 Golden Lessons from a Father to Son to His Son. And I know you do learn as you go as a parent, right? And boy, your parents turned 81 years old earlier this year. They're going to celebrate their 61st wedding anniversary in July. That's really extraordinary. What do you think has been the key to their success as a married couple?
Oh, you know what? They are truly, you know, each other's best friends. And both my mom and dad will tell you it's, you know, a relationship, a marriage is way more give than take. You know, their formula is give 95% and take 5. You know, it's just, you know, I watch them and they struggle like anybody else, and they don't agree on everything, but boy, you know, they have such a unified message. And, you know, I've actually been able to observe it more so, not necessarily, you know, how they parented me, but I watched them interact with my kids, their grandkids, and they have 22 grandkids. And, you know, their message is amazing. I'm actually, my wife and I are so excited right now. We are expecting our first grandchild, my parents' first great grandchild. It's going to be a baby boy in September. So we'll enter a different phase of our lives, but obviously so charged up about that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's very exciting. Your family reunions with the 22 grandchildren, they must be a lot of fun.
they're big. It's always a big event for sure. We often go to my mom and dad's house. Thanksgiving, I think, is my mom's favorite get together. And, you know, one of the traditions that she started that I love, which really, you know, is a quick snapshot of a family and, you know, how big and I think what a great family, so proud of our family, is that we all get around the food at the table. We all hold hands in a big circle. It's almost kind of like what Whoville, when the Grinch stole Christmas, we don't sing, but we say grace, and it's really a special time. You know, our family get-togethers for sure.
Well, it's just so special to talk with you and to read this book, Best Seat in the House, 18 Golden Lessons from a Father to His Son. And I so enjoyed our time, Jack. We'll have to have you on again and continue chatting, because your family is extraordinary and your parents, you know, it's really been passed down from Jack, your father, Barbara, your mother, to you five kids, right? And then you passing it down to your children. At the end of the book, your five children wrote just beautiful tributes to you. And so the torch has been passed, and you have to feel pretty good about that.
So amazing. I'm so excited about it. And honestly, you mentioned the last chapter of the book. And Don Yeager, my co-author, he told me that somewhere during this journey of the book, something really impactful is going to happen. And that was it. I mean, I get emotional talking about it now, but, you know, Don asked me, he says, you know, Jack, can you quickly describe, you know, your relationships with each of your children? And I started to give him a quick, you know, knee jerk response. I said, no, wait a minute. This requires a little thought. And I went home, I started scribbling on a piece of paper. I said, you know what, who better to, you know, give me feedback is for my kids. So I reached out to each of my children. I said, you know, would you mind putting down on paper, you know, your thoughts on how you view our relationship? And what I got back from my kids was absolutely, you know, it was full circle for me, which I believe is the name of that chapter. It floored me. It made me so thankful for them and the relationships that I share with them, and just so thankful for so much. So yes, that was really impactful for me to hear that from my children.
My thanks to Jack Nicklaus II, to Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney of Folds of Honor and Patriot Golf Days, to Nick Theodoro in the studio, Pete Hoffman, Connor Green in production earlier this week. Have a great rest of the Memorial weekend. Stay tuned for the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf. And I will talk with you next Sunday morning from 7 to 8 right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGorrie.